You know, except for 2003, my daughter got married on this weekend, and it took her right up to the weekend before I came up here to ask me if I was going to her wedding or was I coming here. And I said, do I have to go to your wedding? She said, you're supposed to walk me down the aisle. I said, you got to tell me that shit. Because I was an addict. My younger daughter got married. I was in prison. I didn't realize what life was, really. You know, and I went to that wedding as I was supposed to, and I walked to Danny Aisle, and on the way down the aisle, my sponsee family came up here and they called me as I was walking down the aisle. And I answered the phone. He says, you know, I gotta do a workshop. And I said, I'm real busy, Earl. I'm walking my daughter down the aisle. Oh, I'll call back. And I hung up and she just smiled. Because she knows what this program's done for my life, her life, and all the lives around me. No, today I am a father to that daughter. You know, I'm a grandfather to my grandchildren. I'm a loving sponsor. You know, I care about my family, my friends, and I have unconditional love for the people in these rooms. And you don't get it by osmosis. The fact is, you got to work these steps. If there's a 12-step program, you have to work the 12 steps if you want to change. If you don't want to change, that's where the saying, the same addict will use again, comes in. Because you can stay clean for an amount of time, but if you don't change, the misery you will go through not changing will take you back out the doors. Because if you don't find a God of your understanding, guess who that God's going to be? And when you play God, you use. You know, I was real grateful to be asked to speak. It was really a sudden thing, and I love it. And I was asked Tuesday night by message, we need you to call us. And I called, and I didn't get no answer. And when they finally called back, says, I needed to know if you could do step 8 and 9, but you didn't get a hold of me. So you're doing step 8 and 9, right? I love to, Rich. You know, because I love to come up here and speak. This place is inspirational to me. The first week I came up here, I didn't want to go home. Now, I was real bubbly in my recovery. My first 6 months when I came up here, I had my sixth step under my arm. I was ready to go over it. That's how bubbly I was. I mean, I was working this program I didn't want to use again. And at the end of this, because it was so spiritual and, you know, I mean, this is so peaceful up here. I'm from Baltimore City. Come on. Jesus. There ain't never any peace in Baltimore City. There's always noise somewhere. You know, this, what you got out here, is unheard of. Unless you went inside of a vault and turned on a goddamn recording of these frogs and crickets, you ain't getting it. And after that week, I went up, and it was Sunday morning at the breakfast, and I'm taking pictures, and the batteries went dead on my camera. And I was so pumped up, I just, man, I took off out of here, and I went to find batteries. I don't even know where the hell I'm at. So you know what kind of luck I had finding batteries? By the time I got back to retreat, this was over. My sponsorship family was standing on the side waiting for me and calling me some names that I really don't think were nice. And I'm like, my sponsor called me that. He can't bring me up on my character defects when he talks like that. You know? And I left here and I'm like, man. You know? And I went back and eventually I got another sponsor. For a moment. Till I went over these steps again. You know, and I found out when I took a Searching Fearless moral inventory, my part in what I did up here. I should have asked somebody where the store was at. Come on. I don't even know where the hell I'm at, and I got lost. But my self-centeredness and me wanting what I wanted took me right out in that damn car and down the road. Because 6 months clean, I still wanted what I wanted a whole lot. You know? Through working these steps and applying them in my life, things have changed. Believe me, the key is applying them in your life. And sometimes that gets tough. What I did learn when I came in here, my first meeting that I went to in Narcotics Anonymous, because I was from the other fellowship, and I told my sponsor I didn't drink. He said, "You sure you're sober?" "Yes, I am. I didn't tell him I did cocaine." He just thought I was real enthusiastic about doing my work. And I lied my way through there until finally I surrendered. I spent a lot of days using and a lot of days in misery, and when I finally surrendered and I became willing, I hit my knees. And I just asked what to do. And little did I know, right then, I gave God control of where I was going. And I went up the street to a bar, and I walked in, and I asked the bar owner to give me a beer, put it on my brother's tab, and please call him. And my brother came down and said, "What do you want from me?" I said, "Take me to a friend of mine that has a shelter." And he did that, and I went in. The man said, "You're welcome here." Now, I did meetings in there, AA meetings, and lied. I was the great guru, told all kind of lies, and a friend of mine who's here today was with me. And when he found out I used, he like went, "You did what?" I'd been using the whole time. He didn't even know it. And that night, I got cleaned up, and that guy told me, "Come on, we're going to a meeting, and we're going to Narcotics Anonymous." I went, "Why?" He said, "Because you're a damn dope addict. You're not an alcoholic. You're going to the wrong meetings. What's the meeting's a meeting." And I said, "Well, I can't go anyway because I don't have any shoes." He said, "There's flip-flops." So can't wear flip-flops. Pride already, right? Pride right in there. 3 hours clean, I can't go to a meeting in flip-flops. So I went to this meeting and I heard my sponsor. I heard the man speak and he talked about the things he did in active addiction. The things that I would never tell anyone. That's why I got in AA. Because I wouldn't tell people I broke needles off in my neck. I wouldn't tell people the harsh shit I did living in trash cans and dumpsters. And man, I went to AA where I didn't have to say that because they didn't want to hear it anyway. And I heard him say all that, you know, and I listened to him. And man, I was amazed. And I heard him sit there and they read, "Who's an addict?" Uh-oh. Most of us don't have to think twice about this. We know our whole thinking was centered in drugs in one form or another, to getting and using in ways and means to get more. Very simply, as a man and woman, as an addict, his life is controlled by drugs. I went, "Oh, shit. They know. I'm caught." But I wanted to be. I felt a relief. I felt like, after hearing this man, they'll understand. This guy's got to understand. Christ, he sounds like he's worse than me. And he came down and I asked him for his phone number and asked him if he'd be my sponsor and everything. He said, "Hold it. How long have you been clean?" I'm, "Well, 4 hours now." And he says, "Yeah, right. Call me tomorrow." I called him. Called him the next day. And he gave me some things to do. Back then, we didn't have a step guide, and I had a lot of questions to answer. And he gave me, you know, say, "Just get a lot of paper and a pen and do what I tell you." And I know, yeah, I know all about suggestions. He says, "Nah, these are demands. Subtle demands. Do them or die. Your option." You know, what I suggest to you, I'm not doing to hurt you. I'm doing to save your life. Do them or feel the pain. And for some reason, I believed him. I started doing what I was told to do, and I sat down and I started working the first step. And back then, you know, he gave me a list of a dozen words to define in the first step. And I'm like, "Well, I have to do this. I know these definitions." He said, "You do?" Yeah, he said, "Do it for me anyway. Get a dictionary, write the definitions." Okay, 12 words. I got 5 wrong with the dictionary. Because the goddamn dictionary gives you 5 answers for one word, and I pick out the wrong answer. Now here I thought I automatically knew them, and I didn't even know them when they were in front of me. You know? I wasn't as smart as I thought I was. You know? So, we corrected all that. And we started working these steps. And what we did was, I admitted that I was powerless over my addiction. And what he pointed out to me, and it tells you in your step guide and all that stuff, drugs are merely a symptom of this disease. What he taught me when I defined it, addiction, because I knew the answers anyway, And after I defined addiction, I found out it was about my self-centered ways of doing things. And I went like, shit, what do I do about that? He says, stop doing it your way, do it God's way. Okay, now I'm caught. I'm looking at him. I said, what do you mean? He said, just don't do it. If you want to do it and it's your idea, call me up because it's probably the wrong damn thing to do. He says, what have you been doing for all these years that got you to my door? Well, using drugs. And he said, and that is? I said, well, I guess I'd have to say I'd get up and I'd go get the money to get high, and I'd go find a set of tools and a place to get high, and then I'd get high. He said, what would you do then? I said, then I'd find some money to get high and find a place to get. And he's like, whoa, real good negative message. He says, now replace it with a positive message. And I was confused a little bit. And he said, what are you doing today that's making you feel better? I said, well, I get up in this homeless shelter, which I was grateful for at the time. And I get on a bus and I go to the city and I go to meetings all day until I can get back on the bus to come back to the homeless shelter. He said, and how do you feel? I said, I feel better. You know, I'm not constantly obsessed with using. He said, then just keep doing that. It's a positive thing. And that was my first setup on the power of my understanding. And he said, we'll go in here now and we'll work on this second step. He says, and we're going to do it real slowly. And he was a real slow person because he liked to define a lot of things, and maybe that's why I have the understanding I have today. But I just simply said, we came. Okay. He said, what's that mean? I said, not quite sure. He says, well, it doesn't say we come. It says we came. That means you've already arrived. You came to believe, you know, that a power greater than yourself can restore you to sanity. I said, okay. And what might that be? He says, what are you doing right now that's a power greater than you? Get up. Get on the bus. I go to meetings. You know, I do meetings all day. I get on the bus. I come back. I work my step work. I call you. Power greater than yourself. It was. Fact was, I was staying clean and I was feeling better on a daily basis, and my sanity was coming back. Because no longer was I getting up in the morning and all day long obsessing on where to get high, where to get drugs, should I do this? I mean, in the beginning, it's, I don't know if I want to do this, but I want to do it. The obsession, the rattling of the brain, the thinking was getting better on a daily basis. And I came to believe that a power greater than myself was going to restore me to sanity, because sanity was coming. Things were getting better. And we sat down and we talked about it in the second step. And he said, and what are the things you do today that you believe in? I said, I believe that doing the right thing. He said, what's the right thing? I said, well, I don't steal from people no more. You know, I don't lie to people no more. I don't try to manipulate people no more. And, you know, I went through a whole list of things I don't do anymore. And he said, what do you do about that? And I told him the positive things I did. You know, that I got honest. You know, that I learned trust. I learned respect. I learned things that were totally opposite of what I did. He said, they are all the spiritual principles of the God of your understanding. Do you understand what I'm saying? I said, yeah. He said, they are the next right thing. That is where you're at right now. And evidently it's sufficient for you right now, because you're not using right now. Go with it. And I had to make a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood Him. And that is what I understood in the second step. And I was fine with that as I entered the third step. The one thing He did teach me that I tell a lot of people in Baltimore, I don't know how you people feel about it out here, but a decision to me is something you make on your own. When you make a decision, it isn't with any consideration or anything for anybody else, it's yours. This has to be your decision. The God of your understanding has to be your decision and yours alone. That's why we tell you, you can't have mine. Vern's God is Vern's God. You can't have him. Find your own. And I made a decision to turn my will over. He said, now from now on, if you need to make a decision, pick up a phone and it becomes a choice. I don't have to make any other decisions. I can if I want to. But when I pick up a phone and I talk to someone, decisions become choices because there's other options now. It's no longer what I want. You know, it's what other people are suggesting, and I weigh all that out. And he told me as long as I did that, and I made sure, and I tell my sponsees that after you look at all these suggestions, you do the one you think is right for you, you will not use. You will not use. Even if it's wrong, you won't use. You'll say, phew, I should have done the other one. But I ain't going to use over it. I'll do it the other way next time. Because as long as you feel that what you're doing is right, you're going to stay clean. Because we're not used to being right. We're always used to being doing, man, we were in active addiction. Every damn thing we did was wrong. I didn't do any damn thing right when I was in active addiction. I left my kids when they were 7, 9. Didn't see them until they got married and came to jail. They asked me if they could do it. The hell was that? I mean, I wasn't doing nothing right. So I made a decision there to turn my will and my life over to care of God as I understood him. And that meant that I would simply practice God's will rather than my will. That I would take self out of my decisions. You know, then when it came down to doing anything, I would consider the God of my understanding. Because sometimes we don't want to do what he wants. But I have to consider what he wants. And as you longer you stay clean, the easier it is to say, do it his way. Because a lot of times we want to do it our way. But I made my decision to turn my will over. And I did that. And I prayed on a regular basis. I did all the things I was suggested to do. You know. And then I sat down and I did the dreaded 4-step. And, you know, the rumor was it really ain't that hard and all that. I hate to tell you, the 4-step kicked my ass. But that's because I was dumb. You know, we got things that happen around here in the rooms, and you'll find out you ask the sponsor something. We love to inflict pain upon ourselves. I sat down on my 4-step, and I had put my mother first and foremost on my list because I love my mother more than anyone in the world. And I could not write about my mother without crying because my mother died when I was 20 years old from active addiction. And I couldn't write about it. And I cried. And I tried to write, and I cried. And I tried to write, and I cried. I did this for weeks. And finally, my wife turned around one day and said, why do you keep doing this? I said, I don't know how to do it. She said, what's your sponsor for? Shit. Forgot all about him. I was stuck in self. I couldn't get out of self. I was in that pain. I was okay with the pain. It hurt and everything else, but what the hell, it always did hurt. And I called my sponsor and I told my sponsor what was happening. He says, okay, let me turn the light bulb on. So what's the cure for this? He said, don't do your mother. I went, what? He says, do your brother. Do somebody else. Went, shit. I couldn't think of that. I could write on my brother. And I had problems with him. He had some bad problems. I had problems with him. I couldn't write on my mother because it was one of the few beings in my life that I had love for. Because as a child, she was always there. Even though she died when I was 20. She was always there. And what you'll learn around here in the process of recovery is the more you learn to love, the more painful it is when you lose them. Because I've lost a lot of people. And it hurts. You know, when my father died, it didn't hurt as much. You know, and that's okay. I didn't have that relationship. But I found out why my mother hurt. And I did that 4-step. And I took a searching and fearless inventory. Now, this caused a little bit of pain, too. And I called him up and I said, this is a little hard to do. I keep looking at all the wrong things I did and all this. And he says, what are you doing? I said, I'm taking a searching and fearless inventory. And he said, what does the step say? Searching and fearless moral inventory. He says, well, that's what I want. A moral inventory. I don't give a shit what you did. I wonder why you did it. Stop beating yourself over what you did. It's over. Just let me know why you did it. Made stuff a lot easier. So I beat myself up on the fourth step. Believe it or not, I've done it with quite a few sponsees, and it's not really that hard. They do it real easy. Me, I wanted to beat myself up because that's my addiction, my way of doing things. I just had a hard time with it. So after taking a searching and fearless moral inventory myself, you know, I went to my sponsor, and back then we were very fortunate. Four and five sort of like went together. We felt like we were in real graduation class here. I go up and do four, and I've done five at the same time, knocking two of these bad boys out. You know, I'm rolling. You know, and I went up and admitted to God, myself, and another human being the exact nature of my wrongs. That was about the morals. That was about the things that I did, that I stole, that I cheated, that I lied, that I manipulated, all the bad things I did, the immoral things I did, and I had to list every one of them. And you know why I listed every one of them? Because after we were done and we looked at all of them, he made me go to a sixth step. Now I had to be entirely ready to have God remove all these immoral things, these character defects. Now this one I didn't have a whole lot of problem with for a minute because I really didn't have a lot of character defects. By then I thought I was really on my way. But the fact was, I listed all my character defects that I had, that I could see, and we can see the big shit. Big shit's easy to see. You know, stealing, it's pretty easy to see. You know, lying, pretty easy to see. You know, but we have character defects that we're real comfortable with, and we don't see them at all, and other people do. And my sponsor said, now, how about these? And I went on, what the hell are you talking about? Well, Mr. People Pleaser. Well, now I got a problem. What the hell is a people pleaser? Because I knew when I came in, it was all about helping everybody. I mean, I was told that, right? Help the other person. You know, do for other people. And what he taught me was there's a difference between helping people, which is goodwill, and being a people pleaser, which is guilt. You know, and a lot of people have problems with this. I talk to sponsees about it because we do goodwill when we help that suffering addict. We do goodwill when we take them to a meeting, when we help them out, when we get them in detox, when we do things to help other people and we show that we're loving and caring people. You know, this is the goodwill that is intended. Okay, people pleasing, as my sponsor pointed out, I was a used car dealer. My daughter had six cars. He said, now why does she have six cars? Because I'm a car dealer. He said, but she's got one driver's license, one pair of hands, and 2 feet. How in the hell is she going to drive six cars? And he quizzed me, and I'm like, I don't know. I just gave them to her. He said, because you're a people pleaser. Because the fact is, you left your daughter when she was 7, and now you want to make up for that. You can't do it. 6 cars won't work. You were no good fucking father. Admit it. All the cars in the world ain't going to change it. Stop being a people pleaser. What can you do for your daughter today? That's what I want to know. Be there when she needs me. That's it. And that's what I do. I'm there when my children need me. And I've learned that through the process of this program. You know, I had a situation 2 weeks ago that brought a lot of this in. I was in business with someone who I trusted dearly in the program, who was my financial end of my business. And I was the management, the brains, the one who knew how to run the car business. And after 8 months, he decided that he didn't like his money being there, and he closed my business down while I was sleeping. When I got up in the morning, everything was gone. And I went to work, and did anger, fear, and resentment jump in my life like a gorilla? I was scared to death. I was looking at my employees, and I'm like, man, what am I going to do? Am I going to go shoot this guy? Am I going to go beat him up? Bust up his new Durango? Flatten the tires? What am I going to do here? I'm thinking all this, and I'm like, around my employees who are not in the program, and I'm like, I need to get out of here right now and pray. And I went to the corner and I prayed and I came back and I told them I will call and find out what happened and I will be back to you. Because what I found out through that prayer was acceptance, love, and faith. The fact was I couldn't change what had happened. The fact was I loved myself, my family, my friends, my sponsees too much to go out and raise havoc in their life by hurting myself. Because it would hurt them as much, if not more, than it would hurt me as we did when we used. You know, and I have to have faith. And I've learned through this program and through this process that God does not close one door without opening another. You know, so what's down the line for me, I have no idea. August 8th, the door is closed. As of right now, hey, I'm here. I'm right where I belong. You know, I'm getting to do a lot of things I didn't get to do for that long time. Get to go to meetings every day. Get to talk to people in recovery every day. I have recovery houses, and I talk to them on a daily basis. I talk to my sponsee. I'm having fun. I ain't had no damn fun for years because I've always been about money, property, and prestige. It's always been about make money, pay the bills, you know, whatever it took to keep that going, and it allowed me very little time for what I needed, which was my recovery, for me to feel better about me, you know. And what I've realized and what my sponsor said was, you started these recovery houses, you walked out and started a car business, and you left them out there dangling. God just sent you back to work. So I don't even look at this as if this person took my livelihood from me. I look at it as God saying, I need to go back to helping the suffering addict. Because that's what I like doing. You know, I started the recovery houses after reading A Purpose-Driven Life. And that's what I thought my purpose was. And what did I do after I read it? I diverted it with money, property, and prestige. And maybe for this reason, God has took this car business out of my life. I now have plenty of time for recovery. And I'm enjoying it immensely. I came up here, usually I come up here with 3 or 4 people. I brought 10. We're piled in one cabin, but it's okay. You know, we're here, you know, we're enjoying ourselves. A lot of them are new, they've never been here, you know, and to them, Baltimore City morons, they like the crickets and shit out here. This is cool stuff. Beats the hell out of gunfire. We probably got more gunfire than you got crickets chirping. But the fact is, what I did there with that situation was I was humbly asking God to remove the shortcomings that I could feel, the character defects that I could feel at that time, the wanting to hurt this gentleman, the resentment, the anger, the fear, the things that were rolling in me, and what I had to do was humbly ask God, please remove these characters. You know, I just remove the shortcomings now. And God removed them. I mean, come on, 10 minutes later, I come back, but I got it that quick. that quick. I got out of that triangle that fast. And I'm going like, I don't care what happens. I'm blessed. I know I'm blessed. So, after doing the seventh step and learning that my shortcomings are the actions to my character defects, and getting through this with my sponsor, the story I was telling you with him, I got to a fourth step with another sponsor and saw my part and went back to him. And we went right back together, and he was my sponsor till he died. And we came here every year. You know, even when he was dying, we came in here. A lot of people here knew Randy C. from Owens Mills, and we came here every year. You know, I loved him dearly, and it hurt. But in the eighth step, he made this simple for me, too. And a lot of people talk about the eighth step and don't connect it with the ninth step. And I feel like, what the hell am I doing the eighth and ninth step together? The book says don't even think about them together, and I'm going to talk to you about them together. So I guess I'm going to tell you how I did them, which wasn't together at all, because the step wasn't even together. As I said, my sponsor was very particular, and what he told me was make a list of all the people you had harmed. Don't read no more of that. Just write the damn list. Okay. That's what he put on my notes. And I wrote the list of people I had harmed. Then, he gave me a question, which was, are you willing to make amends? Okay. I looked at them and I picked out the yeses and I picked out the noes. You know. And we sat down and we started, you know, I looked at it. I looked at my part in everything. And was I willing to make amends wherever possible? Yes. Most of the time. A lot of the times I didn't have to. Sometimes I didn't know how to. But that's what the ninth step's about. But I made a list of people that harmed them. I became willing to make amends to them all. Except when to do so would injure them. Or injure others. And I found out I could be the other. A little confusing, but I found that out real quick. He made that real simple. If you tell your best friend you were doing his wife, he might kill you. That would be, you are going to be the other. And I can understand that real quick. I'm not telling him nothing. You know, because why bring up something that's going to hurt other people? What we do with this stuff is make a list of people we can make an amends to make things better, to make things forgiven. You know, to give them closure. I actually had to put I made this list and I didn't have my ex-wife on there. And my sponsor's like, where's your ex-wife? I'm like, divorced for about 20 years. Put her on there. For what? Face it now, the bitch threw me out. Took everything, gave me a car. She kept the house, the boat, and everything. Threw me out. She got to keep everything. Why should I do that? He says, let's look at your part. So, I'm sitting down, and I'm willing to make this amends. And we're looking at this, and I said, my part. Okay, I was in the hospital because I was taking too much medication, and I OD'd. He says, yeah. And she left you for that? I said, well, that and the fact that I've probably done it a dozen times. And that I was drinking. And that I was doing a lot of things to hurt her and the family. And she was sick and tired of it. And she told me to leave. He says, and you just left. I said, that's what she told me. You were willing to leave. Yeah. Gave me more money to do what I wanted to do. I didn't have to pay support or none of that shit. And I left. I said, but why do I have to go back to her to make amends? He says, you got to let her know that the reason that happened is because you're an addict. That what you did was because of your addiction, not because of her. And I'm like, I really don't understand this. He says, do what I say and you'll find out. So I had to go to my ex-wife And I had to explain to my ex-wife that I understood why she threw me out years ago, that I was an addict, that I was making her life unmanageable, that she didn't know how to handle it, and all that. And she's like, crying. And I'm, why are you crying? She says, I thought you did all the drinking and all the drugging because I didn't know how to screw real good. And I'm like, what? She said, I thought it was because I was not any good in bed. That it was because I was less than. You know, I wasn't woman enough. And I went like, oh no, it was because I was an addict. And she got to put closure on that because she had believed for 20 years that our divorce was because of her. And I didn't understand that until I did it. And I walked back to my sponsor. He said, ain't it funny how this shit works? You know, if you get to the ninth step, you make a direct amends to people wherever possible. You know, the fact is, your process of recovery from the past is over. You have, the ninth step is about our addiction. It is about what we did during addiction. It is about changing our ways, finding a new way of life, becoming spiritual, becoming God-centered instead of self-centered. You know, there's a lot of implications here. There's a lot of spiritual principles. We try to keep it as simple as we can. But the fact is, if you get to nine, you get to make that list and you get to make that amends. All you got to do is the other three on a daily basis and you won't have that shit to do no more. You know? And the first step, and I tell people this because I like to keep the first step simple, and I did this, and my sponsor used to envy me for it. He had 18 years clean. And I was at my sponsee's anniversary one night, and I was telling people about the first step and how easy the first step is. Because the first step requires three principles. The first step is the key. It's the basis of our recovery. And if you remember the three key principles, which is honesty, acceptance, and surrender, you got this. You can work with that. You can get through the rest of the steps. And if you know how it works, what's the book say? Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness, how it works. But remember the first three principles that the first step has. Has. It has three principles. H-A-S. Honesty, acceptance, and surrender. You will never forget the principles of that step. Never. And with those three principles, you are well on your way in this program. I'm not saying that's the only principles it takes, because it takes a whole lot. It takes courage. It takes humility. It takes a lot of things. But we got to be fed this shit piecemeal. If I told you the first step requires everything, all these spiritual principles, you'd be going home right away. You'd be saying, I can't do it, and you'd be leaving. You know, the fact is, you do this slowly. You do it with a sponsor, because you don't know it all. I thought I did. I found out I didn't. You know, but there's a better way. If you want it, and this is it, the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. It is a 12-step program. You must work the steps if you want what we have. If you don't want to work the steps, good luck. Misery is refundable. But I'll end by saying one thing that was said to me up here 2-3 years ago. Just remember that when we used drugs, we were nobody. And today, we are somebody who can tell everybody you don't have to use. Thank you for letting me share.
Addict Cedric. And my home group is Men Do Recover. Meets Saturday, 4 o'clock, Jefferson and Utica, New Library, Buffalo, New York. And we're on the schedule now. We fought a long time. Well, I fought against that, which is funny because Art was fighting for it, and he was my sponsor and friend, and years ago I didn't understand. I thought, you know, well, I had a different perspective on that. So it's funny that you're sitting there, Art. And so now that's my home group, and time changes and recovery, open-mindedness and the journey. And I was talking to this guy, this Norwegian fella, long blonde hair. We was in California, and I was telling him about it. He said, that's not the way it goes in Narcotics Anonymous. And he changed my perspective on that, that we're inclusive. Whatever we can do to include people, you know, we don't focus on the differences, and whatever gets us here. So special interest groups are good. But I ain't going to go off on a rant on that. But the topic is eighth and ninth step, making amends. And I'll tell you something. I'm just, I like being good to me. I like leisurely, relaxation, food, all that pleasure shit. You know, I really get into it. And I like the woods and the serenity over here. And I'm just like jelly right now. I went down the slide a couple times, did a couple half a laps with the, you know, the width of the pool. And, you know, I had a hot shower. And I'm just like really relaxed and serene. And I didn't put my back to the speaker because I listened. I didn't do that, you know. Physically, I was facing the other way, but I was into it, you know, and facing the woods purposely. And, you know, I got the predecessor over here, Jimmy K, Jimmy McKinnon. He helped write the Basic Tech. And I saved this shirt. I had it maybe 2 years. You know, then I knew that I wanted to wear it. I wanted to pull it out, you know. I got so many recovery stuff, and I wanted to wear this. And so the eighth, I'm just feeling serene. And that's what, you know, you talked about this area. And I live in the city, too, and I was really identifying with that. The night before I left, man, it was eight cop cars blocking my street off again, you know. It's the way it is. I live right in the city. I got the prettiest house on the block. You know, I do a lot of work. And I got almost, I'm coming up on a dozen years clean. You know, so I don't apologize for it, you know. You know, my first apartment had a TV, 13-inch, and a mattress on the floor. We was happy. I had a bus pass and a Walkman. So, you know, it got better for me all the way around. You know, so... But, you know, I wish I could just take that house and move it, man, about right over here. And, you know, I could just be. But serenity is a state of mind, you know. I find the serenity in that I'm grateful that I'm not part of the problem. Because I picked up, so I'm staying up where I picked up. You know, because I used where I bought my house. Not purposely. I just was looking around. You know, and I ended up looking at this house and got it. But I ran up and down the same street. You know, I ain't dry snitching on the guy, but he's still selling dope across the street, who I used to get it from. So, one thing about it, and that's leading me up into the eighth step. Like, I mean, well, who I brought up here, he doesn't, my sponsee, he didn't have experience with eighth and ninth step. He hadn't got there yet. So when we got here and seen the program, we said, you know, we're going to have to switch this. You know, so I told my sponsor that, and I said I wasn't ready to go on into that stuff, you know, because that's surgery of the spirit stuff, you know. That's the truth, you know what I'm saying? That's the stuff I did and all of that, and I'm going to get into that. I'm going to touch on that stuff. But, you know, I told Dave, I called him. And I love talking to my sponsor. I was glad to get some reception. I got this new PDA.
You know what I mean? That's the best you could get on the phone. You know what I mean? In the Sprint store, and I couldn't make a phone call. I was pissed. This addict couldn't play with his toy. You know? I was powerless, but I was mad. I'm real mad about that. That's how I get. These are the problems in my life. And I couldn't even say they problems, man. That ain't fair. These are the little situations of unmanageability. That's the worst it get for me, stuff like that, lately. So when I did get a chance to get some Starbucks back in the civilization, because I like it out here, but I still want to get a Starbucks. I still want some connection with my phone. And then I told him, and he said, well, just pray and share, you know. And so I got all my three books here. I got the Step Guide. I heard him say that, too. It works hard, wide, the basic tech. And I'm cramming back there. See? And Art said, if you did the step, you wouldn't have to be doing that. Because Art used to be my sponsor. You know? Art was my sponsor, man. For y'all got him down here, he moved to PA. And things changed for us, you know. But he emailed me a lot. And we stay in contact. So, you know, my eighth step is like my list. The first time I did it, and they talk about, man, most of the people we came across, we harmed them. And I really identify with that. Because, see, up here at the podium and sharing, man, I mean, I can't hold back, you know. I really got into it. And I actually identify, I don't compare, and, you know, I really got into harming people. The most I harmed you, the better off I felt. I used to beat people. I was like a con man, hanging around by the banks. Come here, let me show you something. You know, I got something to trick you out your money. And getting the money was cool. I was able to cop, but it was how I got your ass. You know, like, if it was a Christmas Eve, and I got you for your whole Christmas, that was, I really felt good about that. Like, I really got that. When he finds out that this is nothing that he has, this is the kind of person you talk to. I was. So, eighth and ninth step is powerful for me. You know? So I had to get into that, man, and I had did that kind of stuff, man, and even if I knew you. So I beat this one girl. And I knew her, and she knows me. And when I got in recovery, I was coming to meetings, and I still had to stop my behavior because I was just coming to meetings. I told my wife, I said, what getting money got to do with staying clean, you know? Because my wife was like, yo, you can't do that anymore. You have to change. And this is what, because she came before me 8 months, you know, and she was into it, and she bit into the recovery, you know, spill, and I was okay. I came along, you know. Afterwards, I was lonely in that house. I wanted to die, you know. I couldn't get enough dope in me. The girls, you know, I had a couple girls in the house, and I just couldn't get enough of nothing. You know, I wanted to die. So I eventually came in. I was arrested, truthfully, for nothing I didn't do. You know, so that was God. So I got clean in jail, and I came out, and I came into recovery. So my wife said, but I didn't want to change. I didn't think it was necessary. You know, spiritual principles and all that corny stuff, that's for y'all, you know. I just need to get my stuff together again, you know, gather up my stuff. You know, I got Debbie back, and hey, you know, y'all work the steps. I'm okay. Can't you tell? Yeah. I'm coming to meetings. And so she said change, you know, and I just never did. I beat some more people with the same behavior and went to church to wait till the girl come out of choir. And I paid her the money I beat her out of when I was using. And I told my sponsor, hey, I made it amends today. He said, I can't talk like he did. He said, he had a sewer mouth like I do, but I try to practice different. I want to, you know, try to have a clean tape at least. But, because my son is conscious now. He listens to this stuff. You know, I listen to it on the way home or something, and I don't want to have a gut. He don't like that. And that's part of what I have to watch my mouth. Part of the change. You know? And that's the part about it is, if we practice it too, it'll get to our spirit. Because I've been watching my mouth, and lately it's been getting easier. that's part of the step for me, you know, just doing it. So I've been conscious of it. But don't hold it against me if I curse. Because that's part of the step too. You know, we make a mistake and we feel it. And we practice it. But anyway, man, this guy told me such and such, you didn't do that, blah, blah, blah. But I hear a lot of us say, because we want to be rid of the guilt. And we want to do right our wrongs. We do start throwing out. I said it was like my heart was thawing out a little bit. Because that's the reason I went and paid the girl. Because she was a nice girl. I knew her from high school, and she knew me, and I beat her. And that bothered me, and I wanted to pay her back. But that's not what we do. You know, we don't. The point of the step is changing our behavior. Because I had still did some more foul stuff to get the money to pay the girl back. But I didn't see that, man. I could not see that. I knew I was making it right with her. I didn't have to look at the other people. I didn't know them. I got a lot of eight-step stuff, man. Art was my sponsor. I'll say it again. And I called him a lot, man, because I was early in recovery, kind of. Well, early, and I would talk about how things were so wrong in my life and what people were doing to me. And some of it was true, you know. Some things were wrong. Some things I had a definite part in. But he taught me what he would say was, I was pissed off. He listened to me rant and rave, and he said, there's a great freedom allowing people to be wrong. Listen to eight step. He kept on saying that. I would call him and go on and on. He said, there's a great freedom allowing someone to be wrong. And I hadn't got up to the step yet, but I had start to understand that by living and letting live. When I got to that point, that's the live and let live part. You know, and sometimes I use that live and let live to allow myself to isolate and cut you out of my life. If you're not doing and responding and behaving the way I think you should. I'm still critical and judgmental. You know, God has removed a lot of that stuff from me. I was getting ready to say I worked on it. I was getting ready to say I got better with it. But no, God has helped me with that. But, you know, it's easy for me to do that still. And I have to decipher the difference whether I'm working the step or, you know, live and let live is like leaving you alone. Like, leave people alone. Because I used to think I was helping people a lot. You know, I had another guy help me. I had about 5 years clean. I thought I knew a whole lot. And I go around the meetings and with the basic text and the literature saying, no, this is what it said. Well, when you shared at the meeting, no, you said this and it says that. And I caused a lot of harm, unintentional, you know, for the love of N.A. and you know, mostly stroking my ego. Because I got it up here. I'm smart, you know. And that caused a lot of harm to people, you know. And like I said, it's unintentional. The literature talk about that. It's eighth step talk about harm, either intentional or unintentional. You know, sometimes we don't know. I used to pride myself on being so sarcastic and quick wit, and you know, and pick you apart and say things, you know, like comment on your clothes, your car, your, you know, what you say, you know, just like really just picking on people. You know, just not to look at me. I didn't know that at the time. But, you know, not to look at myself, I'd find something slick to say about you. And that was a lot of unintentional harm, too. I didn't realize that I would hurt people. You know, and most of all, you hurt yourself because people don't want to be bothered with you. You know, I find out, like my wife is a very nice lady. I get invited to a whole, you know, no, she gets invited to a whole lot of NA events and functions and weddings. And I get to come along because she's nice and we're married. But for the most part, people wouldn't have me there, you know. It's getting better, though. Hey, because the steps improved me. So I had to write this list. And it was a lot of stuff on my fourth step. You know, when I was younger, I had, like, molested by a lady, a babysitter. Then another guy had me with his, put me with his sister. So I turned the trick for bottles, like returnable bottles, and they were 2 cents back then. So it was a bag of bottles, and so my thing of sex was distorted. It was, you know, it was my 7th birthday, and when my boy was 7 years old, I looked at him, and I was reflecting on it. I said, how could someone do that, you know, to a baby, you know? And so I was all mixed up. I was always trying to do it to my cousins. Any little girl who came by, you brought your daughter. I mean, when I was a kid, you know, playing the refrigerator box, you know, like we buy a new appliance. I got caught with a little girl in there. I was messed up. This is what happened to me. So I was a victimizer as a child with other little kids, other little girls, rather. And so I had, you know, it was a family member, the lady. And so it was difficult for me when I wrote my list to put her down on the list because, you know, that was the biggest harm I recall to happen to me. I was the victim. But the way I treat her today has gotten better. I really kind of really don't be involved with her. I run across her sometimes. I seen her on July 4th. And she takes my son and she hold him. She hug him. And I was like, I cringe every time. It's like, I want to just say, let him go. Don't touch him. Like, you know. Because I don't know if she's addressed that. She never made no amends to me. You know, I don't know if she gotten better with that. And I said, that's a family deal, a secret one, you know. But it's not, it's mentionable, but you don't say it. So writing that on my list was very difficult because I've said things to her, you know, on the sly, or I treat her a different way. I never had her at my house. I just really hold that against her. You know, so that's the practical application. A lot of this stuff we do, and I literally say it's through understanding and application that it works. You know, I understand the amends list, putting somebody down. And it's difficult when we have long-term relationships, people who we've been involved with over time, to put them on the list. And I grew, man. I grew into a predator, I want to say. My addiction grew. And I always found women who had less esteem than me, because I had low self-esteem. I still, you know, it fluctuates, you know. You know, and I'm glad that I'm not fooled by anybody here. And some people are confident, but I literally say in the 5th step, we appear to be confident and secure on the outside. I got a lot of stuff. You know, I like I said, we work hard, my wife and I, and we're in recovery, okay? And we got a lot of rewards. So sometimes people think I'm unapproachable for this stuff. But I'm the same way. I'm insecure in the inside and shaky most of the time. Just like all of us. Even right now on the podium. And I've traveled around Narcotic Anonymous. I've done a lot of world service. I was the regional delegate. That's like the GSR from the region to the world. And I did two-year terms of that. But still up here in the woods, in the area convention or retreat, it's the same. I'm just not, you know, sometimes I feel like I'm bumbling. And, you know, and I'm just babbling, you know. But like my sponsor said, just share, you know, and just, it'll help somebody, and most of all, it'll help me. So, I'm glad of that I realized that, you know, I'm really just like everybody else. I'm in the right place. So I would find women, like I said, more lower self-esteem than myself, and I would take advantage of them. I was a womanizer when I was, you know, coming up through, you know, my earlier years. And then I brought that into recovery also, so I victimized a lot of ladies. And the terrible part about it, came up. The terrible part about it, I seen a lady walk across down my street. She don't have no business over there. I guess there's drugs over there. And my wife said, ain't that so-and-so? And I looked, because my wife, when I was, you know, early recovery, see, we've been together since 84. So she knows who I am. She knows. how, in my mind, I was, what's the guy, Larry Flint, and then the other guy all rolled in. Hugh Hefner, you know. I had the ladies, and that's what I was into. Some guys sold drugs, you know, some guys, you know, I was into that, you know. And that's what the deal was. And because that's what happened to me. So that's what I think, what, you know, I went that route. So I was into the sex trade, you know. And so I see one girl, man, when I first came into recovery, and she followed me out the meetings. And I didn't know any better, man. We took her to the mall and did whatever she needed to do, or Boost or Stole or, you know, wrote checks and just, you know, like me. And my wife had shared, she said, don't, you know, this is my husband, Cedric. You know, he's in the meetings now, and, you know, he's crazy. He believes that shit. He ain't, you know, so leave him alone. Let him recover. But hey, it seems like sometimes when you share about yourself, or somebody say, this guy is real sick, you become a magnet for the other ones, man. And them girls follow me out, but the point is, man, and then who knew? God knew I was going to have to do the eighth step. And I felt fucking shame when I saw her walking down. She's still using. You know, I'm sitting on my pretty fucking porch. I got a great life. And it's not my fault, but I didn't help her. I hurt her. I got to feel that. You know? And I was shamed. I didn't say hi. I don't want to say how you doing. I can see, man, one of her legs were bigger than the other. I don't know what. She got problems. She's using. She's sick. I got a dozen years clean, man. That was a long time ago. She's still using. Ain't getting no better. So the eighth step is real for me, and she's just the example. That's what I'm saying. I ain't gonna go all along. That's why I treat the ladies nice. I'm a perfect gentleman. I'm the guy my grandmother raised me to be. Be a good boy. And that would echo with my head all the while I was in New York City, standing on 10th and 28th, having to use and anesthetize myself, because we talk about the confusion and the contradiction in our life. See, I was confused by that misinformation and my experience. And I was contradicting what I was raised. I was raised better than that. I know better. So that's what it's for, the fourth step. You bring that list of the people, man, who I thought were, you know, volunteers a lot. I victimized them. I harmed them. So that's why I do the service I do. I talked about world services. But the most powerful vehicle is the group. Carry the message. So I've done all that, you know, GSI. I've been doing H&I all the while I've been in recovery. I mean, maximum state penitentiaries every Saturday for 18 months, probably missed two or one. My wife thought I was crazy because I had relapsed. So let me talk about that. See, okay, so now me and Debbie together, we have been together 10 years. She's pregnant. We in recovery early on, so we're clean enough to have a baby, you know, but it's like, hey, I'm going to meetings and, you know, can't you tell I'm okay? People say, are you all right? I was like, hey, I'm all right. I'm scared to death that Fatally Cool, wearing the mask, you know. I'm scared to death, man, because she ain't no mother type. She been with me all the while now, since 84, following my road act, you know. And I ain't no father type. Kids was never in my story. You know, if you got kids, you know, I don't want nothing to do with them. You know, today we run a child care daycare center. Talk about amends. But I ain't want nothing to do with kids. And we only got one son. It's like, I love those kids, man. And I don't want to admit it. Sometimes I miss them, you know. See, that's still, I resist. They have the full love of the heart that the God gave me. I want to resist it. I love those kids, man. It's just, you know. But anyway, So now she's pregnant. She's had a difficult pregnancy because we had a rough lifestyle, man. We used for a long time, real hard. You know, it was still always bad for us. We lived in Manhattan in a high rise. But we ended up in Jersey on the turnpike. You know, we couldn't afford Manhattan no more in the motel. So it was rough. You know, eating out the vending machine after spending hundreds, you know the story. So we weren't really, she couldn't hold the baby. We're in recovery, man. It was difficult for me to tell the truth. And I took her, you know, she had to stay overnight in the hospital a lot of times, like for a week or so, bed rest. And the third time she went, I said, I'll be back. They always checked the baby. He was fine, but her health was failing. You know, the placenta was loose. It was separating. And so the third time I said, I'd be back. I'm going to get a sandwich. You ever tell your family you'd be back? I'd be right back. And I used, man. I didn't mean to. I didn't think about it. And that's what the disease of addiction, I understood the powerlessness. Because, you know, like I said earlier, y'all needed to work spiritual principles. I needed to build up my bank account and get some cars and stuff and some outfits, get my Superfly kit back together. You know, I need to get back. You know, that's what my mind told me. You know, I'm going to go to meetings. I'm going to meetings. You know, I'm going to meetings to let y'all see the little book, you know, my little fucking, Mr. T kit. I had got some chains and stuff. And, you know, I was sick, man. Some of us, in the fifth step, I keep referring to that, think we're more important than other people. Like, we're more focused on. I said, wow, I don't really identify with that. I used to think what I did is said people really pay so much attention to it. I'm just one addict in the crowd. Run of the mill. So anyway, the thing is, man, so I used for 2 days and the drugs couldn't get me high. And I kept thinking about one is too many, a thousand never enough. Because I had built up some money. And I kept going to the machine, and I could never get it. It didn't work. So I woke up clean at one, the second morning. I didn't use. You know, I slept in my car. And I was saying to Patrick, the guy back here, we were talking, and I said, you know, he said he celebrated the other day, yesterday. I said, you remember how you felt on the 24th, you know, 17 years ago. Well, 15, yes, 15. And he said, yeah, and I thought about how I felt. I never want to feel that way. So that keeps me. I'm not mistaken at all that I don't want to use drugs. And then the relapse got me so powerless. It's like being mugged. And I've never seen it coming. So thinking about using, like, you know, I got guys that say, well, I ain't thinking about using. I don't feel like using. That ain't got shit to do with it. I got the disease of addiction because I didn't think about it. And I didn't feel like it when I relapsed. So I made it back. My son was born that morning. Got me out the house. You know, Cedric going up to the hospital. Debbie had the baby. I shower was clean. I was clean. And then so I seen my son. I touched him. You know, my mother was up there because I, you know. And so I never used again, you know. So the point is, how I used to treat ladies, you know, I try not to treat my wife. I try to treat her very good, you know. I'm very good to my son. I'm a family man. I'm home every night. I work. I used to work, but I'm injured. I'm disabled now. I got a plate in my neck. 2 spinal surgeries, hard to tell. I look perfectly healthy. God is good, but I'm messed up, truthfully. I got a lot of health problems. But overall, you know, it could be worse, you know. Like I just said, I just went down a slide twice, you know. But I try to really be, recovery starts at home for me. It's practices in these meetings, practices in H&I, practices in these committees and giving back to the program who helped me, Jimmy K, the guys who gave their life and, you know, and meticulously and laboriously put this stuff together, Addis Experience. I don't want to disgrace this program ever. You know, my neighbors know that I'm in recovery. They know I used to use. That's all my men's in the community. I'm involved with Vice President of the Block Club. I'm involved in like all kinds of lists of just like goody two shoe kind of stuff. I'm a totally different person, you know what I mean? Respected in the community where I live and in Narcotic Anonymous. All over the people call me from California just thinking about me in the middle of their day, you know, Art's emailing me, you know, people. I mean, like, my life is really. And it's hard to say all that stuff without trying to blow my ego up, but it's the truth. It does touch my ego. You know, that this region sent me to fly to California to represent the Western New York region. I go to zonal forums. Y'all put me up in Marriott's, and I, because I was willing to serve. Not that I'm so smart, but I was willing to serve, and I do have a practical application of this. And then you got a whole lot of smart people around you who has their perspective on it, and you call on them and say, I don't really understand this motion, you know, and different stuff like that, like the statement we read here. We tried to get that into be, a regular part of our format. I mean, like, you know, official NA literature. It didn't work, you know, stuff like that. I was a part of that last time at the World Service Conference. So, I mean, that's all, like, my amends type of stuff. I make amends by, the other part of it is I got a raggedy 9-step amends. So I don't want to pay my bills. I want to just buy stuff. I want a fixed income. And I'm fearful. And I don't want to, and I'm getting them co-pays. You know, like my water bills. I pay enough just to keep it going. And it don't feel good because it don't allow me to have any freedom and dignity the way I really want to have it. You know, so I really got to dig in and make arrangements, and that's part of the list. You know what I'm saying? A separate list for financial. I can't sit up here and say I got that together. I don't. I need to rely on God and my third step more and bring that into that and make some type of effort, because if I had more, if I use the principles of the program, I'm going to have more freedom. My credit will raise. Then I can get, some more debt, you know. It's a vicious cycle, because I've been through bankruptcy before. See, I'm trying to say, I'm an addict. But it's a maintaining the continuously doing this stuff that keeps it going. I do feel a lot of freedom in that I can look another addict in the eye and the stuff that I do and my family and through doing the 9-step, making amends, basically to myself. And that's why I take trips like this. I try to eat well. I try to live well. I try to get rest. I try not to stress out. I get into prayer and meditation. That's all doing for me, because if I don't take care of myself, I can't take care of my family. And my son and my wife is everything. If that was, you know, that was basically in Narcotic Anonymous. That's basically, I have a limited, I mean, like a simple life, and, you know, everything else ripples beyond that. But I really try to be a good family man, and that's good enough for me. To try to make, make up for the things that I've done, you know. For me not being there when my son was born, it took my wife 10 years to try to, like, forgive me, man. I left her. I left her having him. You know, and I wonder why I'm always watching ER having the baby thing on TV. I'm watching that, because I wasn't there. And it took me a while to figure that out. I said, well, because I missed that, you know. But God is good. I don't want to take a whole lot of time with you people, with everybody. And, you know, I love being out here. The best amends we can do for ourselves is to stay clean, get some understanding on the steps, the traditions and concepts, and be good to yourself. A lot of my family members aren't accepting me. They don't visit me. I don't want to be, it's like, hey, I do it for the people who God placed in my life, who wants to be involved with me, and being of service really did make me feel like a worthwhile human being. I feel like I could walk into New York State prisons. I'm registered, in and out, okay? I just said I was the dirty, rotten scoundrel by the bank, want to beat you out the Grinch, you know, and through this service work, through coming to Narcotic Anonymous, that's what made me better. I was raised in church. That didn't do it for me. I'm not knocking that. This is where God was able for me to hear him, for me to serve him, and, you know, if we serve you people. You know, and that's all I want to be, is a trusted service around my house and in the meetings and in my community, wherever he has me. You know, I saw through prayer and meditation you know, God's will for me and the power to carry that out. And that's when amends present itself, you know, the opportunity a lot of times when I ask for that. And it's not like a lot of time a dramatic big thing. So that's the best thing I can share with everybody is to, you know, try this way. You know, get involved with a sponsor, learn this stuff, and it'll make us feel, my esteem is better, and not for the grandiose stuff that I used to talk about, the shiny this, the this and that. It's the stuff and the people who I affect in the rehabs, and it's doing the right thing for the right reason with the symbol. It ain't for me to look better. I feel like a worthwhile human being, and that's an amends that I made to myself, and it reflects. It's just indescribable. So get involved in service, and don't be afraid to, I got to do a world service plug, to do your worldwide world service resume. You know, you might be picked. I was chosen for, first when I went to world service, I have to share this, and I looked, I seen all these countries and regions from all over the world. I said, where are the black countries? I don't see Africa. You know, I'm in my mind, I'm saying this. I probably said it to my, I don't see this, you know, this addiction over there. This, we meet every 2 years. The next cycle, I get a phone call from World Services. They call me. So I had my resume there. So would you like to be a part of these regions want to request to be seated and work at the next service conference? South Africa, Russia, Iran, okay, Mexico, and Kentucky and South Carolina, they're already seated, but they wanted to split because of geographical differences and stuff like that. So I was a part of that. South Africa got seated. I had some IPs in Swahili. That's the South African language. So as soon as I think of, that's how good God is to me. I want to be a part of the amends, you know, part of doing good with the right intentions. And look, God tapped me on my shoulder. He could have called anybody who had their World Service Pool resume. And it was only three regional delegates out of the whole world that was chosen. One guy from Spain, one woman from Montana, and me from Buffalo. So that's like, I don't need to do shit else but make coffee and open the door, man. I done served this fellowship. You know what I mean? That's humble. So, you know, I'm there at the group. I've done all that. And I'm saying that I'm just a regular guy, so you can too experience that kind of stuff. This is a worldwide fellowship. Believe that. So if you don't, you know, if you got time, and you got a little understanding, and you got a little esteem, people will help you. And you can do all that kind of stuff. So I love everybody here. Be good to yourself, man. I really, truly love y'all. I got the tattoo, the symbol, and I try to live that. I got my clean date. I'm committed, you know, and it works. Thanks for letting me share.